Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio, your intelligence briefing in the war for the free world. I'm Kyle Scheidler of the Center for Security Policy, and I'll be your host today, filling in for your regular host, my captain, Frank Gaffney. Joining me in this first segment is a good friend of Secure Freedom Radio. He's a Forbes columnist and a Daily Beast contributor, and one of the foremost experts in my mind when it comes to China and the Korean Peninsula. He is Gordon Chang. Gordon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
I wanted to talk to you about recent moves on the Korean Peninsula. We had the North Koreans essentially declaring that they were going to abrogate the Korean War armistice and taking another series of what appeared to be very drastic actions and bombastic statements. What is in their mind right now, do you think?
Yeah. Ri Yong-ho, the foreign minister of North Korea, made a striking statement at the end of the UN General Assembly meeting at an impromptu press conference. He said that because President Trump had declared war on North Korea, North Korea had the right to shoot down American planes in international airspace. And that's an abrogation of the armistice, because he said that North Korea had the right to use force. And, you know, the armistice says neither side may use force. So we're back into one of these other situations where the North Koreans have renounced the armistice. And this is a follow-on from at least three times last decade when they have done so in actually clearer terms than they did last month. I don't know what the North Koreans are thinking right now, clearly because renouncing the armistice is really in our favor. And that means that we can do things that the UN Security Council has denied to us. So, for instance, in Resolution 2371, which was adopted last month, the United States did not get what it wanted, which was the right to board North Korean or North Korean-affiliated ships on the high seas to search for weapons. Well, if there's no armistice, there's no agreement not to use force. If there's no agreement not to use force, we can sink North Korean ships. If we can sink North Korean ships, we certainly have the right to board them. And what we need to do right now is unnerve Kim Jong-un. And he is, in one way, which I think is good news for us, has given us the authority to do things that we need to do to keep the peace.
Why would the boarding of North Korean ships be advantageous to us when it comes to, as you said, unnerving the North Korean leadership?
Well, first of all, right now, President Trump, and this is to his great credit, one of the things that he's done right on North Korea is to constrict the flow of money into North Korean coffers. And North Korea earns a lot from weapon sales. And the weapon sales that we are most concerned about are missiles to Iran, chemical weapons to Syria, and of course, nuclear weapons technology, primarily to the Iranians. If we are able to stop that trade, we can further interdict the flow of money into North Korea. We do that, Kim Jong-un doesn't have money for nukes, he doesn't have money for missiles, and he doesn't have money for something which may be even more important to regime stability, and that is gift politics. Kim Jong-un uses money to buy Mercedes, luxury cars, all sorts of things to keep regime members loyal to him. And that's important for stability because the North Korean regime, it's a one-man system. It is unstable. It's composed of a lot of competing elements. He needs to keep everybody happy. The way he does that is just to shower them with luxuries. So we need to prevent him from getting the money in order to buy the luxuries to preserve his regime.
So what is the likely reaction by the North Koreans if we should choose to board ships looking for weapons, either nuclear material or chemical weapons material or just regular conventional weapons that are headed for the black market? What is their likely reaction? A lot of commentators seem to take the opinion that the North Koreans are not rational actors and that any escalation on our part will automatically result in an escalation on their part. Is that necessarily true?
Yeah, we don't know how the North Koreans would react to something like this. This is not a major provocation, such as striking Yongbin, where they have their nuclear weapons facilities, or their various missile sites. This is a much lower level provocation in their mind. And yes, they will huff and puff, and they will try to escalate. But this is a trade that we have to stop, because we cannot permit the North Koreans to sell this stuff around the world. You know, we could say, and we could take a view, look, we'll be happy to let them sell rocket-propelled grenades, like what they are selling to the Egyptians. I don't think that that's right, but nonetheless, people can say that. But we cannot allow them to sell ballistic missiles, because those threaten Israel. We cannot allow them to sell chemical weapons or nuclear weapons technology. I am not happy with Hezbollah, who is a North Korean's weapons customer. I'm not happy with them actually having the bomb. So we have got to prevent this. And yes, this is risky. But on the other hand, we have got ourselves, through decades of relentlessly bad policy, we have got ourselves into a position where every option going forward is exceedingly dangerous. This is something that we have to do. It's unfortunate we got here. We can, if we wanted to, we could have a three-hour conversation on who's to blame, but everyone deserves blame who has handled North Korean policy for the last 30 years. We don't need to do that. What we need to do is figure out how to go forward and actually stop the regime short of World War III. We can do it, but we're going to have to be able to, we're going to have to take risks that we don't want to, but that's because we've had such bad policy in the past.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, the outcome nobody is looking for, which is that overt military conflict over North Korea. But we are seeing the movement of assets, including strategic assets, to the North Korean peninsula. Can you tell me a little bit about what that portends?
Yes. South Korea's security officials have been talking in recent days that the United States has agreed in writing to move, quote-unquote, strategic assets to near the Korean Peninsula. And apparently that is, in fact, true. Though we don't know what that term means in this particular case, but in general, strategic assets means nuclear weapons. So this does seem to be a significant development. You know, it could very well mean that we'll have, you know, more Ohio-class subs off the Korean Peninsula, though that's not really necessary given the range of our missiles. But clearly the South Koreans are concerned about the situation. They want to have, they have been agitating for this for a long time. They are concerned that the United States is not going to defend them. There are many in the South Korean political establishment who want them to develop, who want South Korea to develop its own deterrent. So we need to reassure a very, very nervous ally. And it's not just the South Koreans. The Japanese, indeed, also are concerned, though perhaps not as concerned as the South Koreans. But nonetheless, the United States needs to go and reassure our friends and allies and partners in the region that we will be there to prevent the worst outcomes.
Well, in addition, of course, to the North Koreans, the Chinese, I'm certain, would be watching movements of strategic assets like this and taking them extremely seriously. This is obviously an outcome that they wouldn't be looking for. Is this something that could possibly encourage them to give us the assistance that we haven't gotten from them so far?
Yes, the Chinese will be extremely upset. We know that because they're upset about the deployment of a THAAD battery in South Korea, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. They believe that that battery can not only defend against North Korean missiles, they think it's primarily there to look into China to degrade their deterrent. I don't know if that's true. I tend to suspect that it is, that the Chinese position is correct, and that our reassurances probably are not correct. But the way that I would put this if I were in the administration is to say to the Chinese openly and in public, look, your support of North Korea has costs. This is one of them. And we are going to increase those costs until you stop supporting North Korea. Because it's outrageous that Beijing is telling South Korea and indeed the United States that we can't defend ourselves against the threat that they helped create. because North Korea's missile program is dependent on Chinese equipment, and almost certainly it's dependent on Chinese technology. So at this point, we need to have some candid conversations with Beijing. And it's not just in private. That hasn't worked. We need to have these in public so that people around the world know what's going on, and so that the Chinese understand that we're not afraid of them.
Gordon, enlightening as always, thank you very much. Coming up next on Secure Freedom Radio, we'll be talking to senior editor of the Conservative Review, Daniel Horowitz. So stay tuned here on Secure Freedom Radio.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.